The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month is a 4-CD set of all the hymns, ballads, and chants composed and authored by Martin Luther. It's titled Martin Luther, Hymns, Ballads, Chants, Truth. Find out more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Listen to A Mighty Fortress, From Heaven Above, Dear Christians One and All Rejoice, and 36 other recordings in Martin Luther, Hymns, Ballads, Chants, Truth.
This is that issue that every candidate for federal or even state office faces, and I too certainly stand for life. I know there are some who disagree, and I respect their point of view, but I believe that life begins at conception. The only exception I have to have an abortion is in that case of the life of the mother. I struggled with it myself for a long time, but I came to realize life is that gift from God, and I think even when life begins in that horrible situation of rape, that it is something that God intended to happen.
It's Indiana Senate candidate Richard Murdoch speaking during a debate Tuesday about his thoughts on rape and abortion. It's a sensitive subject. I don't think any politician really wants to talk about it. When we hear people talk about it, we might wince. But that is all the more reason why when the media covers this issue, especially when someone is making his pro-life convictions clear on the basis of what he believes about God, as was Senate candidate Murdoch, that they understand that position and they don't immediately lump it in with other positions, like Todd Akin making his statement about rape and incest. The confusion of the two is rampant in the press today. All the more reason why the media ought to understand the religious angle of that particular story. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway will join us. She's from a contributor to GetReligion.org. We'll talk about the media coverage of Indiana Senate candidates' comments about rape, and we'll also talk about the issue of abortion, the double standard that exists in the media today that requires pro-lifers to defend their positions in great detail, but very seldom requires someone who's pro-choice to defend their positions. It labels one position extreme and the other mainstream. Now, after we finish our conversation with Molly, we're going to be talking with Dr. Paul Grimm. Day 4 of Issues Etc. Reformation Week today. We're going to study the Luther hymn, Dear Christians, One and All Rejoice. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a regular guest. She's a reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
You say that whether it be Todd Akin or now Richard Murdoch, this is a teaching and a learning opportunity for the journalist. What do you mean?
Well, the one way to look at it was that the last few days that we've seen of media coverage of what this Senate candidate, Richard Murdoch, said were just a horrible example of media bias. And it's, in fact, quite discouraging to see the way the media turned a very delicate and important discussion about consistent pro-life positions versus consistent pro-choice positions into this political gotcha moment that was so blatantly partisan and political. But on the other hand, it's a teaching moment, so we can all learn about how to do these things better in the future as journalists. What Murdoch said was actually extremely different than what Todd Akin said. Senator, the Senate candidate Todd Akin had tried to kind of weasel out of his consistent pro-life position by claiming that rapes never result in a pregnancy. And so it's very easy to be pro-life, even in the cases of rape, if you're Todd Akin, because according to what he had tried to claim earlier, well, pregnancy doesn't result. What Richard Murdoch said was actually extremely different. He said, yes, this is a tragic situation and that he struggled with it for a long time, but he believes that all life is equally valuable, essentially. He said, I struggled with it for a long time. I came to realize that life is a gift from God. And I think that even when it begins under horrible circumstances like rape, it's something that God intended to happen. So it's actually a very different point than what Todd Akin was saying. And yet the media kind of responded to it just in the same way, like, I heard rape, I heard abortion, it's like a red flag and I'm a bull and I'm just going to charge. And they missed the difference between these two. And what's really underlying this position that Murdoch has is, you know, we talk about it, about theodicy, this idea of why do bad things happen? If God is all powerful, why do bad things happen? It is not a new concept, despite the way the media treated it these last few days. It is an ancient, I mean, really old concept and doctrinal point that Jews and Christians have struggled with since the very beginning. And you can read the book of Job, I was put in mind of this verse from Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, which reads, as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good. And this idea that God can bring good out of evil is, it's just, it's ancient. It's something that every reporter should be familiar with. Now, clearly, on the one hand, maybe they were just being partisan and trying to help the political party that they favor or the abortion position that they favor. It's also possible that they were just unaware of this basic doctrinal point. So on the chance that they were unaware of this basic struggle over the idea, why do bad things happen to people, this is a teaching opportunity, and we can talk about this ancient struggle about why these things happen.
That's number one. You say that the other thing that reporters would do well to do, and that is to simply meet someone who's a pro-lifer and talk to them. Why is that important?
Well, it's no secret that the media tend to be overwhelmingly pro-choice, and that's very different from the way people are in general. So in general, you have about 25% of the population, according to the most recent polls, that take the extreme pro-choice position. That's no restriction on abortion, no matter what. You know, if you're killing a baby because she is female, that's fine. If you're terminating a pregnancy because you found out the fetus has Down syndrome, that's fine. So about 25% of the people hold that extreme pro-choice position. About 20% hold the position that Murdoch was just talking about. No exemptions for abortion, even if the child was conceived via rape. The rest are all people who are, they can envision some restrictions on abortion, but some abortion rights. And so that's kind of the mainstream position. And the media tend to view one extreme as an extreme and the other extreme as the standard. So this comes out at moments like this when this Murdoch story happens. They don't see the extreme pro-choice position as extreme. They just see the extreme pro-life position as extreme. If they could talk to a consistent pro-lifer and find out why they believe the way they do, why do they think that even if a baby is conceived via rape, that she should not be killed? And just listen to them, find out what they say. Do they believe all life is equally valuable? Do they believe there's a sanctity of human life and why? And I mean, pro-lifers aren't new to these discussions. They've thought about these things for a very long time. If a reporter would just sit down and talk to them, they would probably find that Richard Murdoch's statement was not even really that noteworthy among consistent pro-lifers. No more noteworthy than President Barack Obama's consistent pro-choice statement is among consistent pro-choicers. The media has an obligation to present these views accurately and to frame them accurately. If you're going to present this one view as extreme, well, then what does that mean about the official platform of the Democratic Party, which has no exemptions for no protection for unborn children, no matter what the standard, or what does that mean about President Barack Obama's position? Have you seen that characterized as extreme? No, because the media doesn't view it as extreme. They're very good about talking with people who are pro-choice and why, and they're very good about putting that position in the best possible construction, but they're not very good about doing it with pro-lifers. And I think if they would just meet a few and talk to them, it would serve their journalism very well.
It raises the issue that you discuss, that the burden for supporting your position, that is saying, why do I hold this position, an explanation for why I would support no exceptions for abortion, or on the other side, why do I support no protections for the unborn or even for those who survive abortion? You say that the burden of supporting your position usually in the press is laid only upon pro-lifers. Do you have an explanation for that double standard?
Well, it's funny. It seems so obvious to anyone who is pro-life or knows pro-lifers that there's this blatant double standard. All the time we hear this question, like, how could you force a woman to carry through with a pregnancy if she were raped? We hear these questions in debates. We hear them in interviews of consistent pro-life candidates. But it never occurs to people to ask a consistent pro-choice candidate, so really, you think it's okay to kill a baby just because she happens to be female? So really, you think that you should be allowed to kill a baby moments before it would be born? You know, like, really, you think Down syndrome is a legitimate reason to take the life of another human who's inside the womb? You never hear those questions. And I think it's because the media, I've put it to quite a few journalists. One thing they say is, well, it's the law. You know, the burden of proof is on people who want to change the law. But you'll notice that the media do not apply that same standard when it comes to changing the definition of marriage why then the burden of proof is on the conservative position again, the people who want to retain a traditional definition of marriage. So there's a lack of consistency in how the media treat these social issues. And I think it's just that they haven't really put themselves in other people's shoes. They haven't thought about the fact that people are intensely curious about why people might take an extreme pro-choice position. The other night, I happened to follow a discussion that two journalists were having, and this one journalist said that he thought that nobody cared about President Obama's abortion position. I mean, how can you say that? It's not only of intense interest to people who are pro-life, it's of intense interest to people who are pro-choice. I live in Northern Virginia, and most of the ads that I've seen on my television show from President Obama deal with his abortion policy. It is a major, major focus of his campaign. I mean, I was following his Twitter stream recently, and he was trying to paint Richard Murdoch as an extremist, which is fine. That's what you expect political candidates to do. But the media are accepting that premise and running with it like Democratic operatives, but nobody's ever putting it on the other side to ask those same tough questions of what abortion extremism really is, or you know, what the challenges of a consistent pro-choice position are. I don't understand exactly why it is. I'm sure that it's a deeply committed pro-choice position, which comes out in most of the coverage that you see in mainstream media. But it's really unfair, and it causes a lot of problems with reader trust or viewer trust, and it's just, it's not doing the best that we can do as journalists.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is our guest. She's a reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to GetReligion.org. When we come back, I'm going to ask her to explain what she has called the freak-out factor. That is, when a story like this comes out, the response of the media seems out of proportion with the actual magnitude of the story, and it looks to me like this story of abortion and rape and pro-lifers without exceptions, is going to be one of the big stories, whether either party likes it that way or not, going into the general election in early November. We'll get her answer to that question on the other side of the break. It's Thursday afternoon, October the 25th. Stay tuned. Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly, or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly, or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly, or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly, or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385. 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Think big screens belong in the movie theater, not at church? Think garage bands should stay in the garage, not be jamming in front of the altar? Hey, we do too. Come join us at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, for services that are reverent and relevant, vibrant and traditional. Divine service on Saturday at 6 p.m., on Sunday morning at 7:45 and 10, with Sunday school and Bible class in between at 9. Join us. Not a big screen or garage band in sight. Promise.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of an Indiana Senate candidate's comments about rape and abortion. And, of course, that brings up the larger question of how the media covers the pro-life position. Molly, can you explain what you've called the freak-out factor on the part of the media? It sounds to me like this story, abortion and rape, is going to be one of the big stories going into the general election.
Yeah, I really wish we could ask some journalists what their defense of their behavior has been. You know, why is this leading the nightly newscasts? Why are you literally asking candidate Romney what his position is on Murdoch's statement? It just comes off as so partisan, and I don't like it when people just say that the media are all, you know, liberally biased partisan hacks. So I don't want to just, you know, say that. I'm hoping that they have better reasoning behind why they're doing it. I think partly they were really hoping, you know, the media talk about the narrative that they're trying to construct. There was the Romney is inevitable, and that lasted for, Obama is inevitable. That was a narrative that was lasting for quite some time. And then when Romney surged, it was, well, Romney is surging. He could do this. And then they want to kind of pull it back, and it makes it for more exciting stories if you can kind of make it a horse race and have different people leading at different times. So the two big stories they could choose from in the political press were either this Senate candidate in Indiana making these comments about why he's consistently pro-life, or they could talk about the news that the White House received emails while the attack in Benghazi, Libya, was still happening, before Chris Stevens had even been killed, that an al-Qaeda-affiliated group had taken responsibility for the terrorist attack. Well, one of those narratives makes for an exciting horse race coverage. The other one would just further negative coverage of Obama. So is that why they chose it? I don't know. It's been very weird to watch the news choices that they've made. One of the things I thought was funny was CNN had a Chiron on their screen that said something like abortion distraction for Romney. Well, it's such a self-fulfilling prophecy to run that headline on your TV show. You're making it a distraction for Romney, but the media don't want to take responsibility for how they are driving this, how they are focusing on this. And, you know, I don't know what their reasoning is, but it really smacks of partisan bias, and it does journalism in general no favors to be falling into that trap, basically.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that, the kind of the nature of the Chiron or the nature of the headline that is the self-fulfilling prophecy. You say that Andrew Ferguson has written about this. What has he observed about how those headlines tend to do exactly what they say is happening?
Yeah, it was a great piece Andrew Ferguson wrote on fact checks and media coverage in this month's issue of Commentary Magazine, which is a great magazine too. And he called it the Heisenberg principle of journalism. And it's where just by the nature of observing something or reporting on it, you're sort of changing the story. So he used the examples of when people say, well, this story just refuses to go away. Or, well, questions continue to be raised about such and such. Well, you're the one that's making the story refuse to go away, and you're the one that's raising questions, almost always, as a journalist. I mean, sometimes it really is just legitimately covering the brouhaha. But the reason why stories refuse to go away is frequently because the media are hyping them day after day after day. Now, if they're doing it in a legitimate way, that's fine. If they're doing it in a way that is not in line with what the mainstream is or what actual voters feel about it, that's bad. And that is why this Murdoch example is so bad. They have no conception, no pun intended, of the idea that maybe not everybody thinks what Murdoch said was a gaffe, for instance. Like roughly the same percentage of people would view what Murdoch said as totally reasonable as would view anything Barack Obama said about abortion as totally reasonable. They have no conception of the fact that the vast middle ground on abortion views is that people do want some protection for the unborn and some protection for women who want to have abortions. They paint the extreme pro-choice position, no restrictions, as sort of the culturally appropriate position. They don't even notice when one political party goes pretty extreme on that, but they always notice it when the other political party goes to the extreme. So this is a perfect example of the Heisenberg principle of journalism. They see no news in a consistent pro-choice position, but they see nothing but news in a consistent pro-life position. That is basically pretending to be a referee when you're only calling one side of a battle for offensive fouls or whatnot, as one commentator at Get Religion put it. That is not fair, and it's also just not good journalism, and it doesn't serve your readers well.
You cite an example. You say one of your favorite examples of this is the phrase that you found in the story. Romney campaign says he still supports Murdoch, won't ask Indiana State candidate to pull ad. What did you find in there that was somewhat amusing?
Yeah, what did I find in there that was amusing about that? But it's insane. I mean, why would you? There are so many candidates that are consistent pro-lifers who believe that even if, like Eartha Kitt or one of Angelina Jolie's children or Martin Sheen's wife, Janet, you were conceived via rape, that your life is still valuable. That is, yes, it is an extreme position that only 20% of Americans think that children conceived via rape are still valuable and still gifts from God. That is an extreme position. I will grant that. But the idea that a politician holding those views should be run out of the country or driven off the ticket is just ludicrous. And it shows, again, a lack of understanding about how mainstream Americans tend to view these things. I also saw some media journalists saying that Murdoch refused to apologize or he stopped short of apologizing. Again, when was the last time anyone called on President Barack Obama to apologize for the votes he made in the Illinois Senate on the Born Alive Infants Protection Act? You know, he took a position that was so extreme that very few people went with him, if any. I don't even remember what the vote was in Illinois, but when that same bill was voted on in the U.S. Senate, it passed 98-0. So if President Barack Obama holds this outlier view, that probably many people would find offensive if they knew about it. Nobody calls on him to apologize. I mean, that just to put the candidate on the defensive, but only one candidate, it's just so, it's hacktastic, and it's really inappropriate to do that if you're a journalist.
I want to talk about something you said you're hoping to write about, and that is, and I'm intrigued by just the little tease you give in something that you posted at Get Religion. You say you wanted to write about how the media always refers to abortion in restrictive rather than protective language. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's just interesting. The way that the media tend to write about abortion is as if the whole debate is on whether to restrict abortion rights rather than whether to protect unborn children. So CBS Evening News had a story like a couple months ago, and the headline was something like, 32 states have restricted abortions. So they, and that's, it's not necessarily a wrong thing to phrase it that way. I just find it interesting that it's literally 100% of the time put that way. They never say 32 states pass protections for unborn children. They just don't do it. So the language always favors the side that puts it in terms of abortion rights, and it never favors the side that puts it in terms of unborn, the rights of the unborn. And I see it in almost every media outlet. And there was an AP tweet that was from a week or so ago, and it said, "It's legal to get an abortion in America. But in many places, it is hard and getting harder." So the story is always framed in terms of abortion rights, and it's never framed in terms of unborn children's rights. So, and partly that's because of the legal structure again, but I would point out that this same standard does not apply when we're talking about the definition of marriage. Why then? You've actually seen mainstream media outlets refer to changing the definition of marriage as a fight for, quote-unquote, marriage equality. That is absolutely fine language to use if you're a partisan activist, but if you're a journalist, you don't put it in terms of, you know, it's just gaming the debate, and it's being blatantly unfair.
So what you're saying there, with only about a minute here, is you pass a law to protect guys who work along the side of the road in construction, so you restrict the speed limit, but you don't hear it reported as law passed to restrict fast driving through construction zone. You see law passed to protect roadside workers.
Yeah, I mean, you see it a lot, like when regulations are passed or sent out from an agency or whatnot, they'll always put it in terms of who the regulations are designed to protect, not in terms of who the regulations are designed to restrict. It's not so cut and dry, though. I mean, you can actually see it both ways when it comes to that kind of thing, like just a generic economic restriction. You can see that the media tend to have a little bit more flexibility when they're discussing regulations of that nature. But when it comes to the abortion debate, it is, you know, I'm hard-pressed to think of an example of a major media outlet putting it in terms of protection for unborn children.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
We are only 8 days away, I think it is, from Issues Etc. 24. That's an event that we hold every year where we broadcast live and uninterrupted for 24 hours, beginning Friday, November the 2nd at 3 p.m. Central, all the way through Saturday, November the 3rd at 3 p.m. Central. That's a 24-hour live broadcast with live guests for all 24 hours. We're going to be covering the topics of God, Christ, original sin, justification, law and gospel, new obedience and good works, the ministry and the office of the keys, the church, baptism, the Lord's Supper, confession and absolution, and Christ's return in judgment in those 24 hours in two-hour blocks. It's coming up Friday, November the 2nd. I want you to encourage your friends to listen. I want you to listen as often as you can. In that event, only 8 days away, you can help promote Issues Etc. 24 coming up Friday, November the 2nd at 3 p.m. Central by going to our website, issuesetc.org. Right there on the homepage is a YouTube video that promotes Issues Etc. 24 for this year. Share it with your friends, send it to them via email, share it on Facebook. Help us promote Issues Etc. 24. Friday, November the 2nd, and Saturday, November the 3rd at 3 p.m. Central, a live 24-hour broadcast of Issues Etc. When we come back, the hymn, Dear Christians, One and All Rejoice. Dr. Paul Grimm will be our guest as we continue Issues Etc. Reformation Week. Here's an opportunity for you to get up to 75% off many of the resources you hear us promote on Issues Etc. It's Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale from 8 in the morning till noon on Saturday, November 3rd. Concordia Publishing House is located south of Interstate 44 at 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. The 2012 warehouse sale, Saturday morning, November the 3rd at Concordia Publishing House, 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Holy Trinity Lutheran, Garfield, New Jersey. Grace Lutheran, Naples, Florida. St. John's Lutheran, Chicago, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Unionville, Michigan. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Beverly Hills, California. Epiphany Lutheran, Door, Michigan. The Good Shepherd Lutheran, Inglewood, California. St. John's Lutheran, Sayville, New York. Apostles Lutheran, Melrose Park, Illinois. Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Elizabeth, Colorado. Grace Lutheran, Strasburg, Illinois. And Bethel Lutheran, Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal, the Issues Etc. 300.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe that traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The Gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the Church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the Gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Coming Friday, November 2nd, and Saturday, November 3rd, Issues Etc. 24. It's a live 24-hour broadcast of Issues Etc. from 3 in the afternoon Central Time on November 2nd through 3 in the afternoon Central on November 3rd. Issues Etc. 24, Friday, November 2nd, and Saturday, November 3rd. Listen live at issuesetc.org.